Good morning. How are we doing today? Doing well? Good. I'm glad to be here with you guys. I was telling the class today, I think it's been a month exactly since I've last been here. And so I'm grateful to be here. I'm glad there's no weather or no illness that that stopped me from being here. And so, yeah, I'm very excited. I want to start off with a question. Have you ever felt badly that you do anything to get it? Maybe it was a prize of some sort. Maybe it was a job promotion. Maybe a good grade for a class. Or maybe, if you were like me, maybe it was for the attention of a girl or a boy. I know growing up, I definitely did some crazy things to get a girl to notice me, you know, try to invest in the things she liked, pretended to be interested in her interest as well, just so I could achieve this one thing, which was her attention or to get her to like me back. One of my favorite examples of this in general, this idea of wanting something, but specifically with a girl or of someone that you liked, is in the Disney movie Tarzan. If you haven't seen Tarzan, I highly recommend it. It's a great movie, great music. But in this story, we meet Tarzan. And Tarzan is a human being that was raised in the jungle by gorillas. He was shipwrecked when he was a young baby, and his parents were unfortunately killed in the jungle until he was founded by a mother gorilla. And he was raised that way. So even though he looked human, even though he looked like us, he acted like a gorilla. He understood their culture. He spoke like one. He walked like one. He was a gorilla, even though he was human. And that was his life for a long time, until he met someone, until his whole world changed when he made eye contact with the one. And I'm sure some of us can relate to that, feeling awestruck when you see that special person. And he felt that same way when he met this girl named Jane. His whole world changed. And from then on out, his goal, what he wanted so badly, was to be with Jane. He wanted Jane to like him so much that he did whatever he could to do it. So much so that in the movie, there's a whole montage and a song about Tarzan doing this. He tried to learn how to ride a bike. He started learning English. He started rapping, became very human. He did all of this. Now, that's a bit of a silly example, but that idea still applies. You know, when we want something so badly, we kind of do whatever it takes to get that. Now, take that same idea, that same mentality, that same want that you have for yourself, and let's apply it to other people. A lot of us are brothers or sisters to some siblings. Some of us have children. Some of us are children ourselves. Some of us grew up as teachers. And because of this, we grew up caring for people. It's in our nature. We care and love people. Don't you want what's best for the people you love? Don't you want what's best for your children, for your mother, your father, for your sister or your brother, for your students? Well, of course you do. So what would you do to do that? Whatever it takes, right? Now let's take it one step further. We want to take care of ourselves, right? We want what's best for us. We want what's best for other people, especially those who we know and we care about. Now what about those we don't know at all? What about strangers? What about those groups of people we know nothing about or we kind of stay away from? Do we want what's best for them? Are we willing to do whatever it takes to show them what's best for them? Are we showing them the same love and compassion we do to ourselves and to the people we do know and love? If you're asking yourself, I do. I want to reach those people. I want to love those people. I want what's best for those strangers and for those groups of people. Okay, but what do we do then? How do we approach them? How do we show them that we love them and that we want what's best for them? What's our game plan? What's our strategy? What's our motivation? What's our discipline for this? Well, if you have your Bibles, please turn with me to 1 Corinthians chapter 9. 1 Corinthians chapter 9. We're going to be in verses 19 through 27. 19 through 27. Before we read the next text, so there's verses 1 through 18, we should go over and figure out what's the context. Why is Paul about to talk about what he's about to talk about? And so verses 1 through 18 in chapter 9, Paul is essentially surrendering his rights. Some of your Bibles might have like a little subtitle right above chapter 9 that might say Paul giving his rights or surrendering his rights. And it's this idea that he starts the chapter off saying, am I not a free man? Am I not an apostle? Have I not seen Jesus, our Lord? Are you not my workmanship in the Lord? And for that, the first part of that chapter, he's essentially saying to the Christians of Corinth, these are my rights. This is what I deserve. All of these things I've worked for, I've done this. But there's a bigger picture that needs to be seen here. He says, yes, I deserve all these things. Yes, these are all my rights. But there's a bigger picture. There's something more important than that. And that's sharing the gospel with people, free of charge, doing whatever it takes to show them that love. Because God is more important than me. No matter what my rights or whatever I may want or deserve, God's wants are bigger than mine. So knowing that context, let's go into chapter 9, verses 19 through 27. The Bible reads, "For though I am free from all, I have made myself a servant to all, that I might win more of them. To the Jews I became as a Jew, in order to win Jews. To those under the law I became one under the law, though not being myself under the law, that I might win those under the law. To those outside the law I became as one outside the law, not being outside the law of God, but under the law of Christ, that I might win those outside the law. To the weak I became weak, that I might win the weak. I've become all things to all people, that by all means I might save some." Verse 23, "For I do it all for the sake of the gospel, that I might share with them in its blessings. Do you not know that all the world exercises self-control in all things? They do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we, an imperishable. So I do not run aimlessly. I do not box as one beating the air, but I discipline my body, and I keep it under control, lest after preaching to others, I myself should be disqualified." So from verses 19 through 27, we kind of get this rundown of what Paul, what his game plan, what he wants, his motivation, and why he does it, and how he does it. In verses 19 through 23, we see Paul's plan of action, his strategy. You know, from verses 19, starting in verse 19, going off the coattails of verses 1 through 18, he's just given his rights, but said there's a bigger picture than that. And then he starts the verse in verse 19 saying, it's like, even though I am free, I have humbled myself, or I've become like a servant for all. Paul had no bondage to anyone. He was a free man. But regardless of that, he humbled himself to serve. To serve who? All people. For what reason? Who was he serving? What groups of people? Well, when the rest of the verse we see, he serves those, he meets with those who are Jews, those who are under the law, those who are outside the law, and the weak. Those are the four groups of people he mentions. And when it comes to the Jews, it's very easy for Paul to relate to a Jew. Even though Paul was a Roman-born citizen, he grew up as a Jew. He understood the law very well. In Philippians chapter 3, verses 5 through 6, we don't have to go there, we don't have time, but in that passage, Paul is essentially saying his credentials for being a Jew. He says, I understand the culture. I am one. So he's able to relate to Jews. He's able to understand their culture, show them respect. And it's the same thing with those who are under the law. As a Jew growing up, he had to understand what the law meant. And he was very intelligent in it. And how about those outside the law? And that's a very broad scope. When it comes to being a Gentile, because Gentiles just mean not being a Jew. So he was meeting with these people, meeting them and trying to understand where they came from, how they work, what's their culture, for what reason? Why is he doing this with all of these groups of people? To save them, so he may save them. And then finally, he gets to the fourth group, the weak. This one was a little hard to kind of comprehend. You know, we understand what a Jew is. We understand who are those under the law, those who are outside the law. But when he says, when it came to the weak, I became like the weak, well, who are the weak? Who is he referring to specifically? Is he referring to those who are physically not strong? No. He may be referring to chapter 8, where in that chapter he was writing to the Corinthians about idol worship and about how eating food for idols isn't something you should do. And he refers to those who are doing that action as weak-minded or weak of conscience. So he may be referring to those people. But he also very well may be easily referring to Christians who aren't growing as they should. As Christians, or as humans, I should say, in order for us to grow, we have to do what? We do it 3 times a day. We eat. We eat to survive. And as a baby, we aren't allowed to eat certain things because we're not ready for it yet. And so what do babies primarily eat or drink when they first come into this world? They drink milk. And as they continue to grow and grow, they're able to eat some stronger things, more things, and to the point of an age where they can essentially have whatever they want. They could have a steak if they wanted. They could have a hamburger. They could have pizza. But you have to grow in order to get to those things, right? It's the same thing as Christians. As baby Christians, we're still called to eat spiritually, but we need to eat spiritual milk. We need to consume that. And as we grow, we'll be able to consume more. We can have our spiritual steak, if you so will, at the right time. But sometimes as Christians, we're not growing the way we should. We're not eating the things we need. Some of us are still aren't. It's like those who aren't growing as they should, they're stuck. And so even with those people, though, Paul is like, I meet with them. I become like them. Now this idea of becoming like them, what does that mean? You know, for Paul, again, it was super easy for him to understand how a Jew thought he was one. He understood how the law works. He's able to relate to those. Even though he was a Jew, he was also a Roman. So he, in a way, he was also a Gentile. He could understand those outside the law. And even with those who are weak, he wasn't always a Christian. He could understand what that was like. But is he becoming like them? Is he saying here, in order for us today, in the modern day, in 2024 as Christians, in order for us to reach this certain group of people, we need to become like them? In order for me to reach the LGBTQ community, I need to become like one. Is that what Paul's saying? Is he saying I need to live that lifestyle? No, he's not saying like that. He's not saying that at all. One thing that is common with him meeting all of these people is that he never compromised the gospel message. Paul just merely met them where they were at. Here's an example. This is what one of my professors, when I was going over this sermon, this is an example he used to explain this to me. When Paul's meeting with the Jew is under the old law, right? There's certain requirements and rules that Jew has to follow. One of those being, he can't eat certain animals. He can't have pig. He can't have bacon. He can't have ham. But Paul, being a Christian now, he's no longer under that law. As Christians today, are we under that law? No, thank goodness, because I like bacon. So even though Paul's not under this law, he's free to have bacon. But if he was going to meet with the Jew, do you think it'd be smart for Paul to have a BLT in front of the Jew? No. Why? Be disrespectful. The Jew, that's not, to the Jew, that's wrong. So even though Paul has every right to do that, he's no longer under that law, he's still not going to do that. He wants to respect them. He wants to meet them where they're at. For why? To save them. No matter where they're from or their lifestyle, we need to understand we need to meet them where they're at. But we can't compromise the gospel. Paul never did that. We can't fix it in order to reach a certain demographic. No, the gospel should stay the same. But we need to come to understand these groups of people. We need to respect them. We need to show them that we love and care for them. So that's Paul's game plan. But what's his motivation? Why is he doing this? Well, we see that in verses 24 through 25. Verse 24 says, "Do you not know that in a race all the runners run, but only one receives the prize? So run that you may obtain it." Verse 25, "For every athlete exercises self-control in all things. They do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable." So Paul quickly transitions into this analogy of running. But even before that, in verse 23, after Paul says his game plan, essentially, how he meets people where they're at, he kind of says his why. He's like, why do I do this? For the sake of the gospel. But even more than that, he says, for the sake of the gospel, but then he says something else. He says, so I may share in its blessings. I don't know about you guys, but when it comes to sharing the gospel, sometimes I forget that I receive blessings in that. We know that we're giving them blessings because they're giving their life to Christ, and we were the one that was able to show them that opportunity. But us as Christians, we receive blessings as well. I know when I've gotten the chance to share the gospel, when I get to share it, it serves as a reminder for me. It reminds me of who God is and how much he loves us because he made that available for us. It also serves as a reminder for me in his teachings and what I'm preaching to someone and asking myself, I'm like, am I living this way still? Those are big blessings to me. But I started asking myself, what are other blessings we receive as Christians when we get to share the gospel? And so I asked one of my professors, David Henniger. I asked him, I'm like, David, when you were in Nicaragua, because that's where he was a missionary, when you got the chance to share the gospel with someone, what were some blessings you received? And he stood there, he finally said, he said, a big blessing I got one was that I got the chance to have a new family member. I got the chance to have a new relationship with someone, a new brother and a new sister. And I was like, whoa, I never thought of it like that. But it's true. As the church, we're all a family. Maybe not by blood, but we're all family. We're all brothers and sisters. I know for me, I was a bit too young to remember when my sisters were born, but maybe some of you remember when siblings were born. Maybe the excitement and the buildup to it, this idea that you're about to have a new family member. But it doesn't really hit you yet until your mother or father comes home with the baby, with that baby girl, with that baby boy. Remember that. Remember the excitement, the love that you felt. This was your new family member. Even though I was too young to kind of remember, I was around 2 years old when my sisters were born. But my mom said, from then on out, I spent most of my time with them. I could never be apart from them. Because even though I may not remember it, my two-year-old brain saw them as new family, a new part of me. And what a blessing that is. It's the same idea as Christians when we get to share the gospel. New family member, new relationships. What a blessing that is. So that's why Paul does this. He wants to partake in these blessings. And so then, again, he uses this analogy of running a race. His motivation, this essentially saying is like, we as Christians, we're like athletes. We're running this race. Why does a runner run a race? Why do you guys enter competitions? Whether you played sports or you were in choir or whatever competitions you entered in, why did you enter into those competitions? To win the prize, right? You want the victory. But what's great about the race we run as Christians is that this victory, this prize that we get, it's for all of us. But Paul is saying here, he's like, even though it's available to all of us, you need to run in a way. I can allow myself to be a little lax. Sometimes I can be like, oh, it's for everyone. It's like a participation award, you know. I gave it my all. You tried your best. So I don't have to run that hard. Maybe I'll slow down a little bit. Maybe I'll stop even. Paul is saying, don't do that. Run in a way as if you're the only, that there's only going to be one winner. Let that motivate yourself. As athletes, and maybe you grew up playing sports, you had to learn to discipline yourself, right? Maybe you had to show up to practice every day. You understood the importance of that. Maybe you had to keep your studies up in order for you to play sports. Maybe you had to eat a certain way so that you could keep the physique and the energy you needed to play your best. Paul is saying it's the same thing as Christians. In verse 25, he says, every athlete exercises self-control in all things, not just a few things, in all things. Because they do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. What is he talking about here? We've got to look at some cultural context at the time. At the time, when it came to big sporting events, there would always be one winner. But back then, they didn't receive medals for different places. They didn't receive a trophy. They received a wreath made from leaves and branches from this tree. And it was such a high honor to win that. It's kind of like today if an Olympic athlete were to win a gold medal. What an honor that is. But what was interesting about this wreath that they would win is that in a couple days, the wreath would wither away. It would become like nothing. That's what Paul's saying. He's like, athletes practice this self-control to get this imperishable wreath, this wreath that will just go away in a couple days. But we as Christians, our wreath, not perishable. Yeah, I said that right. It's never going to go away. It's never going to wither away. It'll be there forever. And that wreath, that prize, will be the only winner. So that you don't slow down. So that you can push yourself. Do it for the sake of the gospel. Do it so that you may share in it. That's his motivation. So how do we do this? How do we discipline ourselves? How did Paul discipline himself in running this race? Well, we see that in 26 through 27. He says, "So I do not run aimlessly. I do not box as one beating the air, but I discipline my body and keep it under control, lest after preaching to others, I myself should be disqualified." Paul understood that there was a goal to reach, that there was no time to be wasted. Say someone approached you and were saying, "You're going to participate in a race with Michael Phelps or with Usain Bolt, some of the fastest athletes in the world in their respective sport." And they were saying, "You have to beat him or you will fail or you're going to fail." And so do you think in order to train against the fastest person alive or the fastest swimmer alive, would you waste any time in doing that? No. That was the goal. That's the goal you need to reach. So you would push yourself every minute of every day, training yourself in order to beat him. Paul is saying that exact same thing. He's like, there's a goal for us to reach. I understand that. So there's no time to waste. We need to make the most of it every day. We need to practice. We need to exercise. We need to be things become habit. Because time isn't to be wasted. So don't run aimlessly. Don't hit at nothing. The next, we see that Paul humbles himself down and understands that he needs to grow, that he needs self-control and he needs discipline. Sometimes it's humans. It's easy for our pride to get in the way. Saying to ourselves like, "Oh, I don't need to grow. I don't need to improve. I got this." My dad always would tell me famous last words when you say, "I got this." Paul had to humble himself and tell himself, he's like, "I have room to grow. I need to discipline myself." Paul also understood that he came with a bit of power, and he knew that he presented to Christians at Corinth or at Ephesus or whatever. We as Christians, we have influence. God has put us in positions, whether at our work or at school or at whatever you're doing, for a reason. And so live your life as an example. Control your actions. Watch what you're saying, because you have no idea who's watching. You want to influence them in the right way, so discipline yourself. And finally, in verse 27, this verse kind of wraps up all of this. Another big reason why Paul is doing this. He says in verse 27, "But I discipline my body and keep it under control, lest after preaching to others, I myself should be disqualified." Like we said, Paul wants to be a partaker in the blessings. And he knows if he's not disciplining himself in the right way, if he's not running as hard as he can, he's not training, he's not meeting people where they're at, showing them the same love and compassion, it's like, then I'll be disqualified in where I'm at. This, as a preacher, as a Christian, it's like, why should I deserve these things? He understood that there was a bigger goal in mind, not only for himself, but for people he cared about and those he didn't. He was always aware of his influence and his example. So to conclude, how does this apply to us today as Christians or as a church in 2024? Well, when I was studying for my sermon and trying to figure out this conclusion, I started asking myself these questions, and I want to ask you guys these questions as well. Do we have a game plan to reach people? Are we prepared to reach people and to connect with every kind of person, to every kind of group? Are we motivated to run the race with all that we've got and to encourage others to do the same? Are we practicing self-control? Are we humbling ourselves to allow growth, to allow God to transform us? It's a straight up yes. Because it's hard. This race is hard. Satan's going to throw everything he has at you. I know I've said that multiple times in different sermons, but it's true. Something that's beautiful about this race, though, is that we're not running it alone. I'm not running it alone. I'm running it with you guys. You guys are running it with me and with each other. So when you see your brother or your sister struggling, help them. Carry them on your back. Help push them. Help them move forward. That's what's beautiful about this race. God provided us with a family to go to each other when we're struggling. God doesn't want us to just go out and meet these different people by ourselves. He's like, go together. Work as a team. Be in unity. And so, again, easier said than done, asking ourselves this question. So how do we do this? Well, let's draw near to God. Go to his scriptures. Study his word. Go to prayer. Surround yourself with fellow like-minded people. Don't let the world cause you to conform. Humble yourself. Tell yourself that it's okay for me to grow and that I probably need that growth. Let the gospel also motivate you. Let it motivate your love and compassion for people, because the gospel isn't just for us. It's for everybody. Let it motivate you to share this good news with people. It's not meant for us. The gospel isn't meant for us. Isn't meant to stay here with us. It's meant to go out. So train hard. Discipline yourself and encourage one another and ask for help. This is a hard race, guys. And plenty of people need help. Plenty of people out in the world and even people in the church. So run as hard as you can and help others that need it. Because God's going to help us. He's helping you. God bless.